Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It pains me tremendously to have the American taxpayer be put in this position, but it's better than the alternative.
Three little pages. In the midst of all that pain that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson was feeling and expressing there on ABC This Week yesterday, the bill to take over hundreds of billions of dollars in bad mortgage debt is just basically a three-page blank check. New York Senator Chuck Schumer wants more.
You need transparency, you need oversight to make sure this huge amount of money is spent without favoritism, in a fair way, and that people see what's going on as it happens.
All right, Chuck Schumer on Fox News Sunday. Democrats want relief for homeowners facing foreclosure in this bill. It's not there. They want a broader economic stimulus plan attached. There is none. A limit to the pay for the CEOs of failed banks if the money is coming from taxpayers. And House Financial Services Committee Chair Barney Frank wants more than just a handout to the banks in the form of buying bad debt.
I think it's entirely legitimate to say, as a condition of buying the bad debt, we want some compensation restrictions. I don't want the federal taxpayer to be at risk for that bad debt, and then the guy who incurred the debt gets tens of millions of dollars on the way out the door.
So what does that mean? Well, that could mean pressure to seize the bank's assets, maybe their buildings, as in the savings and loan bailout, which became much more affordable as a result of the government owning that hardware. Listeners, should Congress support this bill? 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. You be the pundit. We want your opinion. Or post your comments and questions to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Our first guest on this today is Daniel Gross, who writes the Money Box column for Slate.com and writes for Newsweek. Hey, Dan, thanks for doing this again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here, Brian.
Three little pages. That's all it is. You know these bills they pass in the middle of the night that are hundreds of pages on much less complicated matters than this? How can it be just three pages?
Well, you know, the Newsweek cover story has this week has a picture of Henry Paulson, and the headline is King Henry. And in effect, what we've done in the last few weeks and what this piece of legislation does is give the Treasury Secretary, or at least the Treasury Secretary for the next 4 months, near, I don't want to say dictatorial, but really unfettered power to deal with a series of national crises that requires something more thoughtful. It's sort of unbecoming in a democracy. We've had, you know, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bailouts, AIG, done, presented its fait accompli without real consultation by Congress. This requires an act of Congress, but, you know, they want to pass this in 2 or 3 days. They want very limited language, and they want a great deal of authority. You know, we're always told that to spend is to tax, and what we're getting with these bailouts, whatever the price tag is, $300, $400, $500, these are tax increases on the American people, and they are being done with virtually no public discussion, debate, hearings, et cetera. I mean, to call this a clown show is a insult to hardworking clowns everywhere.
What would you insert that is so severely missing, in your opinion?
You know, almost as much as the insertions. I mean, this idea about, you know, executive compensation, a lot of these things are sort of backwards looking. I think what's really missing in this debate and in this legislation is a sense of how are we going to pay for this? Who should pay for it? You know, this is a zero-sum game now. We have a $500 billion deficit. Every dollar you spend increases it. So I think it's imperative for President Bush, Secretary Paulson, the jokers that come on CNBC from Wall Street lobbying outfits who tell us that we have to do this because it's vital for the economy. It's incumbent on them to tell us, okay, if it's going to cost X hundred billion dollars, these are the taxes we're going to increase to pay for them, or these will are the spending cuts that will be required to pay for them, because otherwise it's just kicking it down the road. We're going to pay for it sooner or later.
Lester in Manhattan.
The thing that's really dysfunctional about this process is the absence of any discussion about how we pay for this.
Lester in Manhattan has a question. Hi, Lester. You're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. This is obviously a microeconomic problem. The macroeconomic problem is getting consumer spending back, which is the cause of the credit crisis. But the microeconomic question would be how these debts are going to be valued. No one knows what they're worth, and whether the banks set the value, say 50 cents on a dollar, or the or some sort of negotiator sets the value, whether it's, say, 20 cents on a dollar. And that's not been addressed as far as I can see.
That's a great question. And, Daniel, how
that,
do we know?
That is the whole deal here, because if they're set at a high price, it's a giveaway to the banks. If they're set at a low price, it's not a giveaway to the taxpayer, but it'll cause the banks to recognize large losses. On CNBC this morning, they were talking a little bit about some of the process by which it might work, and there are, you know, sort of auctions where basically the sellers kind of list, okay, these are the lowest price I will accept for these assets, and they sort of submit their bids, and the lowest bids basically get hit. So that is one way to structure it in such a way that, you know, it's not arbitrary and it's not sort of the highest bidder. It's basically forcing the people selling to say, this is the absolute minimum I will accept, and kind of going from there. So that's one approach they might take.
Dominic in Westfield, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, Brian. I have a couple of questions, because I don't know the inner workings of how this bailout could work, even on any kind of monetary level at all. What I would say is there any way where the money could be, part of that money could be held, could be used to stay off some of these immediate problems, and partial of that money be used for more long-term projects, where instead of bailing out the banks and the CEOs and so on and so forth, where you actually put the money where it's going to bail out the people that cannot afford to pay their mortgages, in trying to create more jobs with renewing our infrastructure with part of that money, rather than always bailing out the people that are the culprits for these jams that we get ourselves into.
All right. Short-term, long-term, Daniel Gross.
Again, I wouldn't count on it from this crowd. I think Henry Paulson is rightly focused on the real short-term issues, which is, you know, the U.S. can't afford, not just for domestic reasons, but for geopolitical reasons, to have the U.S.-based financial system fail. So, you know, this is the dam breaking. You know, use the metaphor you want. They're rightly focused on
it. But his point is, Paulson's point, one of them, is that the long-term issues are the short-term issues. A clip we're going to play in a few minutes of him says the capital markets were frozen. We had a situation where American companies were unable to borrow money. This could ultimately affect small banks, loans to businesses, loans to farmers, jobs, people's retirement. And then outside that clip, people are worrying about the U.S. stagnating like Japan for the next 10 years because credit seized up over there when they had a recession. So I think Henry Paulson would say the short term is the long term.
Well, look, the long term issue is behind all of this is still the housing market. What's caused this is, you know, reckless lending, yes, but the fact that housing prices fell, we have the speculative bubble that is unwinding, that will not be fixed by this short-term measure. And it's, you know, I interviewed him on Friday. He said that we're going to have housing and mortgage issues for years to come. The bad news is that there's no quick fix to solve the underlying problem when you have had a credit-related bubble in a sector like housing that takes years to clean out. So, you know, I think inevitably their focus, you know, whatever way they want to pitch it, what they are worried most about is sort of short-term meltdowns.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. My concern about this is how this issue is being resolved in such a hurry by Henry Paulson and company, it seems to me we have an ideal way to resolve this, which is through the election. Each candidate should put forth his plan and let the American people, the real economic experts, vote on which next president they want to resolve this. I mean, frankly, I don't believe Paulson when he says things are real bad. I mean, I think of three letters, WMD. I mean, this administration's credibility is not with me.
And certainly Paul Krugman in his column today is calling it a rush to bailout akin to the rush to war in the panic after 9/11. If this is born of panic and not so thoughtful, then we could be, you know, giving too much blank check authority to the Treasury, just as too much blank check authority was given to President Bush, in his opinion, with respect to Iraq. Daniel Gross from Newsweek and Slate.com, is there just too much at stake in the short term?
Yeah, I think that analogy, while correct in certain regards, only goes so far because, you know, the difference is with WMD, that was a purely a government thing. There was no sort of market telling us what was going to happen. And when you look at what was the market was telling us was happening was Lehman Brothers failing, Merrill Lynch feeling it could no longer survive, large commercial banks, Washington Mutual, et cetera. I mean, this was happening in real time. So the crisis was real. There's no sense in which it was manufactured. The stress, you know, you can look at whatever charts, what was happening in the marketplace, credit markets seizing up, the kind of global ramifications of it. No doubt that there was something very serious going on that required some form of, you know, if not the actual action itself, but the implication and promise of action. And that's what a lot of this is about. You remember back in the summer when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were running into trouble, these are companies that have to roll over tons of debt on a constant basis, Paulson said, well, you know, give us the authority to come to their aid, you know, because we want a bazooka, right? We want to have this in our pocket, and people will know the government has the firepower, therefore they won't have a, you know, quote-unquote run on the bank. Well, you know, within weeks, they had the run on the bank anyway because the fundamentals got worse, but it did stave it off for about 8 weeks. I think a lot of the sort of short-term positive impact of this bailout or the talk of the bailout and the reason that they do not need to proceed in haste is that the very act of the government coming out with this, putting this into motion, talking about it, acts as a something that, you know, bolsters confidence in the short term, that stops you know, some of these big investment banks from cascading towards zero.
The Dow is down so far about 150 points. Does that mean anything?
No.
You wrote,
given the magnitude of daily jumps that we had in the past week, you know, 4 or 5% up and down,
they're
that's
just
nothing.
They're just hanging around to see what happens, right?
Yes.
The Captain of the Street is the title of your article in Newsweek, and you seem to come out in support of Henry Paulson at least as the right person for the job at this moment, yes?
Well, I think, you know, given the situation, someone with his experience and temperament compared with the prior Treasury secretaries who had come out of an industrial and not a Wall Street background, certainly the best of the three Treasury secretaries, the right person at the right time, dealing with a hand that was dealt by others. He means well. He takes this seriously. I think there's a, you know, he's not a captive of ideology the way many other policymakers in this administration have been. But, you know, I think we are going to see, so far, so good, but the limitations of precisely those things I talked about, the unwillingness to reckon with the fact that we are basically creating massive new taxes with no way on sort of middle-class people or your basic taxpayer without any talk about how we pay for it.
Well, you say massive new taxes and how we pay for it, but there are people out there saying the taxpayers could ultimately profit from this, especially if they do what Barney Frank is suggesting and take some of the hard assets like the bank buildings themselves, like they did during the SNL, and that ultimately these are obligations on mortgages, and these things are going to revalue, and then the government is going to sell these things. And ultimately, you know, a lot of the consensus last week on the AIG bailout, for example, was that the government was going to make money on this. Do you not believe that?
That's possible, but, you know, we have to consider that the legislation as currently structured gives the authority to Treasury, to the Treasury Secretary. And given that, you know, as of right now, there's a good chance that Phil Graham might be the next Treasury Secretary, I would not bet on the government making money from this.
There's probably not such a good chance of him being the next Treasury Secretary anymore. But
one of the things that's been revealed and what's happened is basically an entire generation of Wall Street executives, the type of people who go and become Treasury Secretary, especially in Republican administrations, they've been wiped out. It's like you know, the 20-year-olds in Britain during World War I. They're all either humiliated, disgraced. You know, they don't have any claim on public attention anymore. So the bench is very shallow.
Daniel Gross writes the Moneybox column for Slate.com. Has a big story in Newsweek about Paulson this week and all of this called The Captain of the Street. Daniel Gross, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The capital markets were frozen. We had a situation where American companies weren't able to borrow money. This could ultimately affect small banks, loans to businesses, loans to farmers, jobs, people's retirement.
They've been staggering from crisis to crisis, and they haven't even said today that this will end the crisis.
So that was Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson again on ABC This Week, and Republican Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama on CBS Face the Nation saying they haven't even said that this will stem the crisis. So will a near $1 trillion takeover of bad mortgages actually work? And how would we measure success? We'll get a view of all this now from Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, former head of the free market advocacy group, the Club for Growth, as you may know. He's also the one who John McCain famously told that, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but something like he didn't know that much about the economy. Steve, thanks for coming back on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And what was that that John McCain said to you?
Well, this was about 2 years ago in an interview that I did in the Wall Street Journal. And I think the quote was something to the fact that I don't understand economics very well. And I must say that the only thing that distinguishes him from most politicians in Washington is at least he admits it.
Right. So, and we've talked before about how you didn't think he was just being jokingly self-deprecating. He was really expressing what he thought was a limitation. I heard over the weekend conservative people like Newt Gingrich and Lawrence Kudlow expressing extreme misgivings about giving the government this much power and with the pressure to add more regulations after the emergency. William Kristol is even suggesting in his column today that John McCain perhaps should oppose the bill. Are you for this bill?
At first I was very open-minded to it because there's no question last week we saw one of the most tumultuous weeks in Wall Street history. You know, you probably have to go back to October of 1929 to have seen a week like this. And so there was clearly a sense of panic, and I applaud, you know, Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke for trying to, you know, put some calm in the markets. And you could make the argument that they succeeded in doing that. By the end of the week, the markets actually recovered a lot of the losses that occurred from Monday through Thursday. But, you know, as I look more at the details of this package, I've really moved into the skeptic category. I think that this...
What details of this package? It's three
well, good
pages.
Point. You know, the stuff that's trickling in, and that's exactly part of the problem, though. You've put your finger on it. You know, we're talking about Congress voting sometime in the next, you know, 2 or 3 days on one of the largest expansions of government power in peacetime, perhaps in American history. With most of the members of Congress, I got a lot of calls from members of Congress over the weekend saying, what is this? You know, what are the details of this? One congressman called me over the weekend and said, is this the end of free market capitalism? And so I think to rush to judgment here for Congress when you're talking about not, you know, tens of billions of dollars, but hundreds of billions of dollars at stake, I think is a mistake.
But of course, it's not the end of free market capitalism. And all these people who compare it to the Soviet Union and Hugo Chavez, I mean, it's fundamentally different, isn't it? Because when Hugo Chavez nationalizes industries, he does it as, you know, an unnecessary right. statement of principle as he sees it. When the U.S. takes over all of this, it's meant to be temporary. They're going to sell all this stuff off, get back to more pure market
right.
capitalism as soon as they can, just so Americans don't suffer for the next 10 years. Is that fair?
I'm a little more skeptical than you are about this. I mean, I think you're right that, I mean, fundamentally you're right that the idea here is to get capitalism back on its feet. I think we agree on that. What I maybe disagree with you on is what are the longer term repercussions of this? I think you're going to see if this $500 billion line of credit, which really what it is for the government to buy up all these failed assets, if this is approved, then it's going to be much more difficult in the years to come for conservatives like me to make the case against farm bailouts or, you know, welfare expansions or any government power, because people are going to say, well, you were in favor of, you know, big bailouts for the banks and for CEOs and for investors, but not for the little guy.
But on the other hand, you're already in this position as a conservative where liberals and others are saying, look, so much deregulation of the banks, so much ability to let these kinds of investment banks not even be transparent in all this securitization of bad debt and all of that. This is what got us into this mess. So we're going to, and even John McCain is saying this, so we're going to have to regulate more in the future. If you don't go for the bailout, then people may be even more scared about markets going forward.
Well, there's something to that, no question about it. But my concern is that, look, by the way, read our lead editorial today where we really talk about how government has to share a lot of the blame in what has happened in this meltdown. I mean, we've argued for years about the inherent risk of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and these kind of quasi-government institutions, that this was a recipe for economic disaster, and we were proven correct on that. I trace a lot of the problems in the banking sector right now. I mean, clearly there was greed and excessive leverage. There's no doubt about that. But it's also true that the Federal Reserve Board, which controls the money supply, was way too easy for way too long, printing too much money, keeping interest rates too low, which created this housing bubble in the first place. So to say that this is a purely a failure of free market capitalism, I reject that. I think it's in part a result of excessive greed and the kind of bubble irrational exuberance mentality, but also government really facilitated this in the first place.
I want to read some of our comments that are coming in by the dozen on our comments page.
Okay.
And there's a strain of them that repeats and repeats and repeats. One person writes, can the government bail out my student loan?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I take responsibility for my actions if the banks can't take responsibility for theirs? Another one, while I can understand the need to stabilize the market, I'd like a bailout of my credit card balance, too. And it goes on from there.
Yeah.
What do you say to those folks?
That's exactly the point I'm making, actually. I mean, and I think, I'd flip the question back to you. Why should we bail out these big banks but not people? Let's face it, when you talk about small businesses, which are really the backbone of the U.S. economy, two out of every three small businesses in America fail. It's the one out of three that gets the good idea, that gets it right, that succeeds and makes money and creates jobs. So failure in the free market economy happens all the time. And the real question is, who gets bailed out and who doesn't? And, we've seen, by the way, in just the last week or so, Bear Stearns, a major investment bank, got bailed out, right? But then Lehman Brothers didn't.
Yeah.
And the real question is, why one and why not the other? Where is the principle behind that?
And Sarah in Suffolk County, I mean, there's no real answer to that question.
Exactly.
I think the answer to that question is that if I'm going to kind of take Paulson's side here, that there are times where you have to muddle through.
Right.
There are times where you bail out when you think it's really so crucial to the economy. He made a judgment that Lehman could fail, like a lot of other much smaller businesses could fail, and you could let that happen because it wasn't going to seize up the whole economy. But then came AIG, then came the money market funds, then came the entire credit freeze, And so you muddle through. And I guess I would throw that back to you and say, is that really so terrible?
And I should say this, you know, even on our editorial page at the Wall Street Journal, there's a lot of disagreement. So, you know, there's people who are really, you know, fighting. I've talked to many Republicans in the last 48 hours. They're all over the map on this. So people are still trying to sort it out.
Right. Sarah in Suffolk County is trying to sort it out. Hi, Sarah. You're on with Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal.
Hi. And I, you know what, I find myself agreeing with you, which is, you know, I'm a tree-hugging liberal, but greed is really where it's at, and it astounds me that we have not held the feet to the fire of the Congress and the Senate for the lack of oversight. And this does not start with Bush, and it has little to do with him. Everything was in place long before he got into office. And the, in fact, the 90s, we can't even credit to Clinton, the deregulation and all that started with Reagan. And it amazes me, really. Greed is at the essence of it, but we need to really put into place a transparency. There's nothing wrong with capitalism and the profit, but over the past 20 years, the difference between the rich and the poor has gotten worse, much greater, even though we prospered in the 90s. Mm.
And so, you think the bailout would exacerbate that?
Oh, I think it's wrong entirely. I worked for 5.5 years with an attorney who only did foreclosures. We only did foreclosures from 1990-something through the early 2000s.
And so to that Paulson clip that we played before where he said this is unavoidable now, this is absolutely necessary because, quote, this could ultimately affect small banks, loans to businesses, loans to farmers, jobs, people's retirement, unquote, if they don't pass this kind of thing.
And what excuse will they use the next time it happens?
Sarah, thank you for your call. Stephen Moore, I want to play some clips and get your reactions to them.
Okay.
We have John McCain, Republican presidential candidate, on 60 Minutes last night on CBS. This is a few days after he said that SEC Chairman Christopher Cox should be fired.
I've admired Andrew Cuomo. I think he is somebody who could restore some credibility, lend some bipartisanship to this effort.
He's a Democrat.
Oh, yes.
He served in the cabinet of President Clinton.
Yes, and he did a good job, and he has respect, and he has prestige.
So I don't know if you were watching, but did you, like, fall out of the bathtub when you heard him say Andrew Cuomo for SEC chairman?
That's the first time I've heard that because I was not watching 60 Minutes last night, but I almost spilled my coffee when I just heard that. I'm not a big fan of Andrew Cuomo's. And I would say this. I want to respond to something that this woman who just called
sure.
in. I mean, there was a lot what she said was right.
Yeah.
But one thing I really reject is this idea. You know, you go back to Reagan and all this started. I mean, the truth is, if you look over the last 25 years, in this country, even with this market meltdown that we're facing right now, we've faced the greatest run-up in asset prices and the biggest increase in wealth in the history of the world. I mean, the value of U.S. assets from 1980 through 2008 has gone from $17 trillion to $50-some trillion. And so, you know, we've been on an incredible run of wealth creation. I happen to think it's been a shared prosperity. But then to say, you know, as soon as this thing, you know, we face this meltdown, and by the way, don't forget, in 2000, we faced a meltdown with the technology sector, and we got through that. I'm still an optimist. I still think we're going to get through this.
You're saying that without the bailout, this is a correction that the people of the United States can absorb?
I think we can. And I'm an optimist here, but I think we can get through this. And I worry that if we, you know, that there is a real problem of moral hazard if we start bailing out everybody who makes bad decisions.
How about letting the FDIC go because the government may not afford it? Would you break that promise?
No, absolutely. We need deposit insurance, and I'm in favor of that.
I'm not
in favor, by the way, of extending this insurance to stockholders.
To the money market.
Yeah, right.
Here is Obama on 60 Minutes.
I think there is no doubt that if we had had a regulatory system that had kept pace with the changes in the financial system, that would have had an enormous impact in containing some of the problems that are out there. I mean, you've got greedy CEOs and investors who are taking too much risk, but that's why we set up rules of the road to prevent that from spreading into the system as a whole. And unfortunately, we had a lot of deregulation, and instead of modifying rules for this new economy. We just eliminated them.
And I know the parts of that you disagree with. You articulated them before. One more clip. Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York City, on NBC's Meet the Press. He says this will not be a repeat of the 70s in New York, when as a result of a financial crisis, the city stopped policing the streets and shortchanged schools and parks and cultural institutions.
We are going to go ahead and continue those things. We may have to stretch out some construction projects. We may have to ask people to do more with less. We may not be able to have the frills at the edge, but we are not going to walk away from our city.
Can New York be different? You're a New Yorker, aren't you?
I'm not, but I go there all the time. And, you know, this is going to be an intense fiscal crisis for New York, because every time Wall Street loses money, it's less tax dollars for the city and the state. But I certainly applaud what Mike Bloomberg said yesterday, you know. And let's hope that Wall Street recovers, because it's important on so many levels, not least of which, you know, America's greatest and biggest city needs to be able to function and needs to have the dollars.
Mike Bloomberg for financial czar. A lot of people are saying,
yeah,
you know
they're
going to create this entity, and he should come in and head it. You for that?
Maybe. I'd be open-minded to it. You know, he's a smart businessman, and he's been a pretty good mayor of New York.
And give me your analysis politically. 20 seconds left. Is this going to pass this week?
You know, I think there's a strong possibility, you know, very likely, but there's opposition mounting in both parties, because a lot of members of Congress are saying, we want to see the details before we approve this huge new bailout.
Stephen Moore from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, thanks for doing this.
See you soon.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll ask, what would Winston Churchill do?